Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. I have a few pet peeves. I know that this is radically shocking to you, but do any of you have any pet peeves? Raise your hand if you have pet peeves. And Nicole's hand was the first up. She was thinking about how she doesn't like me. That's what it was. I have a few pet peeves. Share some of them with you right now. The first one's not a pet peeve, it's a law of nature. It's ingrained in the moral fabric of the universe. If you're in the left lane and you're going slow and you don't move over to the right lane, that's not a pet peeve, that's a crime and you deserve to be executed. So that's one of them, okay? Another is people who talk really loud on their phone in coffee shops or subways or things like that. Another of them is about 50% of everything that people do on social media. But there is one pet peeve that I have that is more than a pet peeve, because it comes from me being a priest, or I guess just a believer, but definitely because I'm a priest. And it's more than an annoyance. It causes dismay. I'm going to tell you what this is, and you're going to think that I'm being mean. I'm not being mean, I'll explain. And I don't mean to offend anybody. But here's the reality. It is my pet peeve to hear about 50% of the stuff that's said at funeral homes. And most particularly, either A, she's in a better place now, or B, that's not him, he's not here. Or C, if you really believed, you wouldn't be crying. Not normally expressed that bluntly. Right. And I bring these things up today because of all the readings are about the resurrection. They're about the fact, and this is so very important, they are about the fact that we are more than our souls. And I know I've preached about this before. I keep on bringing it up because I think it's one of the most important things. We don't talk about it a lot. I think it's one of the most important things that people just get led astray by today. We're not our souls. You have known me for 4 years. Yes. I haven't slept probably in half of those. But do you understand that there are a lot of times that I have a little quip or comment that's on my mind that does not actually cross my mouth that I bite back? I can't tell you, because I know it would be inappropriate. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a funeral home and somebody says, oh, that's not them anymore, they're not here. And I want to look down and say, who is that then? Who are they putting there? Is this a surprise? Oh my goodness, did they switch things around? I don't know what's going on now. Right? But if they're not there, then who is that? Because the reality is, dear brothers and sisters, their soul's not there. But their body is. And just like we're not bodies without souls, so we're also not souls without bodies. And this is the thing that I need you to really understand. Like, our consciousness, our mind, our free will, all radically important and all only part of us. After Mass, we'll see if one of you tries to do this, but after Mass, if somebody slaps my face, right, I'm not going to say, why'd you slap my body, right? What am I going to say? Why'd you slap me? I want to go deeper in this. I know I mentioned this before, but I want to go deeper in this. It's building to something, I promise. according to the mainline theology of the church, there is only one human person in heaven. Let's say that again. According to the mainline theology of the church, there is only one human person in heaven. Jesus is in heaven. He's a divine person. He has a human nature. There are lots and lots and lots of souls in heaven. All the saints are in heaven. But they're not people. They're only parts of people. So let's see, my dear catechism students, who's the one human person in heaven? Do you know? Huh? Thank you. Can't read lips. All right. So Mary. Mary is the only human person in heaven because she's the only one who's been risen so far. She has her body and her soul. I don't know if I've told you that before. Okay. All of this is to say, that bodies matter. Our bodies matter. The way we serve the Lord in our bodies matter. And if somebody is not really there, and if you shouldn't cry because somebody's really in heaven, and if don't worry, they're in a better place now, applied, then how do we explain Jesus going to Lazarus's body, saying, "Where did you lay him?" And even though Jesus not only believed that Lazarus was wherever he was at the moment, soul-wise, but also knew that he could raise him from the dead in roughly 5 minutes. And yet he still wept. He still wept. Because of the horror of the ripping apart of soul and body that death is. Bodies matter. And so we've been talking about the different twistings of desires and goods in the human person, the twisting of possessions, the twisting of the body, the twisting of the soul. We went through that with fasting, prayer, and almsgiving. We went started to go through that again with fasting, prayer, and almsgiving. We went through it again with poverty. It's going to be a rough one, y'all. I'm sorry about that. Okay. And today I want to talk about chastity. Now, through a lot of that first part of the homily, you might have been saying, "Well, Father, since that we know that bodies matter, why do you keep beating this dead horse?" Because a lot of people say that, and then they act exactly opposite. You ready for one of the things that I hear most frequently in my priesthood, online, and in person, like all the time? Stop talking about what we do in the bedroom that doesn't affect our relationship with God. Yes, it does! Because bodies matter. Exactly. Okay. That's the reality, dear brothers and sisters. They matter. And you want to know the final proof of how much they matter? Do you want to know that proof? Sunday after Sunday, you come here to receive what? His body. And if bodies don't matter in our relationship to God, then goodness, why is he giving us his? And so we have this reality that people who tend to think that bodies aren't holy, that bodies aren't sacred, that bodies aren't important, they just take that as permission to do whatever they want with them. And then you look at the church, and the church says things like, "No, you should fast, no, you should practice purity, no, you should practice self-discipline." And people say, "Well, that's because the church hates the body." Exactly the opposite. You don't put so much time and energy into caring for something that you think is worthless. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I want to talk about the virtue of chastity first, excuse me, the vow of chastity first, and then how we can kind of live it, right? So the vow of chastity is this hardcore answer to the twisting of the lust of the flesh, at least in part. It's a permanent answer. And I said a lot of things about the second reading yesterday, and I'm kind of out of it today, so I'm going to pass on that. But let's just go right to this. When we talk about the lust of the flesh, when we talk about the way that our bodies are tempted and our bodies become impure, the lust of the flesh is not, for example, that I would see my name in the New York Times, right? The lust of the flesh is not, for example, that I would publish a paper in a journal. It is not that I would gossip about my friends. Very simply, the lust of the flesh is always biological. It is always organic. It is about what we are as living biological beings when that gets twisted. Are you with me so far? Please tell me you're with me. I need that right now. Okay. All right. So there are a number of basic drives that we have as animals, as biological beings. And one of them is to eat. Now here's the thing. Can you go your entire life without eating? What will happen? Die. Good. Less of you answered than the first time, and I'm really concerned about that. Like, you need to understand that you will die. Can't do it. After food and water, and probably rest, the most powerful biological urge we have is to pass on the species. Do you understand that? Can you go your entire life without conjugal relations? Will you die? No, you will not die. And sometimes I just want to scream at people in the confessional, like, Father, I just can't. I can't. I have to do this. Like, dude, 44 years, still not dead. Crazy, certainly crazy, but not dead. Okay. I did not die. You're not going to die. You're not going to die. You don't need it that much. You're not going to die. Okay. And this reality is something that we have to really face. We have to face it in terms of temptation and sin. But we also have to face it in terms of, like, looking at the church's practice of celibacy. Because you know what people tend to still think, despite the answer that you gave me here? That if you practice celibacy, you're somehow going to die or go crazy, or it's going to twist you, or it's going to make you insane. Which, I wonder what y'all were doing for like the first 20 years of your life. There's nothing harmful in it. There's nothing harmful in saying no. I mean, obviously if the entire human race said no, this would be a problem, but there's nothing harmful in saying no. And I say that because I want you to understand something that's very odd. This could be very odd for us. All right, I know that y'all listen to like one out of three words out of my mouth. And I know this because of the letters I sometimes get from people, not so much from y'all, but in the past, okay, I know this. So, I want you to listen to me clearly. Rabbi, listen to me clearly. Can you listen to me clearly? I am not endorsing what I'm about to talk about. All right, if you come and say, well, Father Sinth had said this, and you write a letter to the bishop, I'm going to strangle you, because I am not endorsing what I'm about to talk about. Okay? Does everybody understand? But you should know that, like, not yesterday, not in the time of your grandparents, but a few centuries ago, you know how it's hard to give up meat for Lent on Fridays? A few centuries ago, it was the law of the church that husband and wife could not come together for the entirety of Lent. Because it's based off what St. Paul says, that they would separate themselves for a time of prayer. Now that seems insane to us today. But how could that ever have been the practice of the church, ever, if even temporary chastity wasn't somehow beneficial? Okay. Now I'm not saying you do that today, but you should know that's where the old tradition came from of not having weddings during Lent. Can't have a wedding during Lent if you can't consummate the marriage. Okay. And so, dear brothers and sisters, the reality is that even in people who don't take a vow of chastity, who don't take a vow of celibacy, there should be some presence of this virtue. Whether it be during Lent that, you know, this is going to be ridiculous, but I'm in that place right now. Whether you watch television shows with less attractive actors, I don't know, like, you know, whether you try to make sure that you are a little bit less interested in flirtatious media. I'm not saying sinful stuff, you should say no to that all the time. I'm talking about other things. But also, And this is, I'm not, this is a suggestion for something to think about. If you're married, suggestion. If you're married, maybe during Lent, maybe during the last 2 weeks of Lent, it would be a time every year to say, you know what? Maybe we really should spend this time focused on our emotional connection rather than our physical connection. I know they're connected, but still, I think it's prudent. And now that we're done with that very uncomfortable topic, I'm going to also say, right, the various other ways that we have to discipline or chastise the body. Different penances of the body. We talked about fasting, we've talked about chastity, but that's not the only ways to discipline the body. And one of the things that I want you to hear, I'm going to say something, you know, I'm nervous. One of the things I want you to hear is that the church has always, 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 how long? Always taught that bodily penance is meant to make you uncomfortable, and that if you harm yourself with it, you're doing it wrong. It's about stinging oneself, not harming oneself. And so if you look at some of the other things that the church has practiced, ones that some of the people still do today, right, is take cold showers instead of hot showers. Sleep on the floor instead of sleep in a bed. Wake up before dawn instead of waking up by sleeping as long as you can. By the other things that I don't recommend today because people are so kind of tangled up in them, the other things like hair shirts are using the discipline, right? But all of this is about a little bit of discomfort, and it's not because we want to harm ourselves, and it's not even because we want to hurt ourselves, it's because we want to discipline the body the same way that people who work out do, right? It's about not being addicted to comfort, because we know that if we give in to comfort all the time, it's going to lead us to sin. Does everybody understand that so far? Okay. So we need to remember bodies matter. That if the body was not holy, that if the body did not belong to the Lord, that if the body was not capable of serving heaven, then the cross would make no sense. Then the resurrection would make no sense. Then the Eucharist would make no sense. And so the next time that we're tempted to think that God only cares about our heart or our mind, we need to remember that our entire salvation hinges on the body. God bless you all.